coffee stay black, just like me. Don't need no sugar, don't need no cream. Coffee stay black, just like me.
Coffee Black is an emerging social enterprise that seeks to bring back the intersection between Black history and Black coffee. Did you know that coffee is the second most sought after commodity in the world, right after oil? It's worth an estimated $100 billion a year. That's big stacks, family. That's stacks on stacks. Modern coffee culture is immersive. Baby seeds to morning cups, farmers abroad to local roasters, the global product both makes the world run and brings people together. But the lesser known reality is this: coffee was swindled from Africa in the 16th century. And at Coffee Black, we believe Black communities re-engaging in coffee is both a means to reclaim a stolen destiny and build generational wealth within the diaspora. Yo, what up? It's your boy Bartholomew Jones. I know it's been a while. It's been crazy. We just got back from Atlanta. We had a crazy experience there. Met a lot of really dope people. Beautiful things happened in the Black coffee community. But I came on today because I wanted to talk to you guys about something. If you're watching the video, you can see I'm wearing this shirt. It's our African Gold shirt. It's one of the first pieces of apparel we did. And the story behind this hoodie is actually kind of corresponding with something that's going on in the news right now. So if you look at the hoodie, These are for sale on our website, by the way. The first country on this is Ethiopia, which is where pretty much everybody in the world agrees coffee originated, which is in Africa. The next country here is Yemen, and we haven't talked that much about Yemen because I really wanted to just communicate to you all the story, right? So after coffee spread from Ethiopia, it moved to Yemen specifically. And that's where a lot of the coffee cultivation happened. And I think it's important here that we note that this is a collab, right? I'm a hip hop artist. If y'all know me, I'm an educator, I'm an MC, and I'm a coffee nerd. Part of being an MC, and what being MC, being a part of hip hop culture, has taught me is the beauty of the collab, or as we call it, the cipher. It's when multiple people bring their ideas, and even though the beat may start with one individual, normally the beatboxer, like the idea spreads and it grows as it moves through different people's experiences and their culture and their lived life, right? So look, that's what's happening with coffee. Coffee moved from Ethiopia to Yemen. It was transplanted there, I believe. But the thing that's interesting about this is that plants don't necessarily follow rules. And so all of nature is moving these things around. And the region oftentimes can be or the regionality of a plant can be controlled, not necessarily just by human actors, but also by animals and lots of other things that happen. The wind even, right? Water. So coffee grows in this region of the world in Africa, right? Starting in South Sudan, even to Ethiopia, to now Yemen. Yemen is going through a crisis. There is a humanitarian crisis unlike really anything we've seen in a long time there. And there's a big need for coffee to be propped up in that community. There, you know, multiple generations of farmers in Yemen right now, like father, son, grandfather, great-grandfather. I mean, we talking 6-7 generations of coffee farmers who, you know, may be in danger of losing an opportunity to really continue to grow coffee in their family simply because of how difficult it is to export, in addition to the lack of accessibility to the coffee. And there's something in the news right now that is showing there may be a new varietal of coffee found in Yemen. Now, before we move forward, some of you may be saying, okay, Bartholomew, what is a varietal? Think about this, right? You got apples. We all grew up eating apples if you grew up in the hood because they had them at school. And there were a couple different apples, right? You had the red apples, the green apples. If you got lucky, you got the yellow apples. You know what I mean? The reason why those apples are different colors is because they're different varietals of the same plant. All apples, but different colors. And if you really peep game, they have different flavors. Again, yellow apple is the best. That's just my personal preference. Let me know how you feel. But the point is, the varietal can affect color. It can affect taste. It can affect texture. It can affect a lot. This is true for all plants. All plants have different varietals. So coffee, like other plants, has different varietals. There's varietals like, there's two big ideas. First, you have Arabica, and then you have Robusta. Those are the two largest families of coffee. Most of your instant coffee is going to be Robusta, although there is currently a conversation about bringing Robusta coffee into kind of the specialty world and doing single origin Robusta. That's actually in Vietnam right now. Like, there's a big situation where people are pushing Robusta coffee. I want to try some. If you have some, send it to me. Next is Arabica, which is mostly your specialty grade coffee. A lot of times if you're in the grocery store, they'll mark it and say 100% Arabica. That doesn't really mean very much. It just means like it's one of two families. And generally, Arabica tends to taste slightly better. But again, like even that conversation is changing because people are saying, that might be kind of racist, right? In the sense that a lot of these countries that go Robusta tend to be poorer, darker, and people tend to say that these coffees are not, quote unquote, as good. But in reality, like, all of these things are made by God, right? And we know no sugar, no cream. Every note is important. And so there's a big conversation to push that forward. In Arabica, there are lots of different varietals, right? So you can have Bourbon Arabica or Arabica Bourbon. You can have Katura. You can have something called Geisha, which we're going to get into. It's so many different varietals. Each of these varietals have their own unique flavors, right? In Ethiopia, generally what they have is called the heirloom varietal, which just means it grows in the wild. But the interesting thing that's happening in Yemen right now is that we're seeing Yemeni coffee may have one undiscovered varietal that actually holds, it's not even a varietal, it's really a family within the Arabica strain. I guess that's the way we could say it. It's a family within the Arabica strain of coffee that may hold hundreds of different varietals. This is crazy for a couple reasons. Okay, the first time that a new varietal was introduced in recent history was the Geisha varietal. The Geisha varietal was found in Central America. Long story short, someone did what we all know has happened if you've been listening to this podcast. They went over to Africa and stole some coffee and then put it somewhere else. That stolen plant was ignored for a long time until one family decided to cultivate that stolen plant and put it in auction, which if you don't know, all coffee seeds in each growing region of the world are essentially put into these auctions called Cups of Excellence. People cup or taste the different coffees. And if you don't know about cupping, you should check us out. Every week we cup coffee with some of the homies on our Instagram. But yeah, it's a way to taste coffee and kind of get the best idea of the potential a coffee has. And so this Geisha was put into this cupping in Central America. It did extremely well because this is a coffee that's almost directly traced back to Ethiopian heirloom varietals, which tend to be like fruitier. That's why we sell Ethiopian coffee to you guys, because we want you to understand the origin of how coffee can taste, right? This coffee did crazy, did super well. But I was listening to a podcast, and this individual, James Hoffman, who's like a coffee nerd. If you're a coffee nerd, we listen to, you know, a lot of us listen to James Hoffman. He was having a conversation with someone from Kima Coffee, which is a Yemeni coffee importing company that really wants to better their country and their community through coffee, right? They discovered this new varietal called Yemenia. And as James Hoffman and the individual from Kima Coffee were talking, one conversation came up that I thought was really interesting. So I'm going to play that for you guys.
Well, Geisha is a difficult story because, one, it is a variety taken from Ethiopia and provided no value back to Ethiopia in its, I guess we can say theft, but we can just say taking it for now.
Well, it was tested in Costa Rica and spread.
Yes.
The Petersons benefited from La Esmeralda producing this astonishing coffee that you know, got bid up at auction and just built this name and its brand. And longstanding value to producers was quite high, whereas if a producer grows Geisha, they can ask for a higher price that is disproportionately higher than the cost of production or the decrease in yield compared to a Bourbon or typical kind of coffee plant. With Yemenia, how do you think about retaining value for farmers in Yemen for what is theirs?
Okay, that's a good question, but I think the question that we're not asking is, how do we think about returning value for what was taken? Let's be honest, what was stolen. Anyway, let's talk about it. So if you heard that, what it was interesting, the kind of trepidation around whether or not it was stolen, even though it obviously was one interesting. But two, what was interesting was the idea that the coffee Yemenia has the potential to have a similar effect, and therefore those who are exporting it and introducing it to the world need to take extra precautions to protect it. Because, you know, we don't want what we call Grand Theft Java, which is the theft of coffee, either in 1616 or from the Dutch conquering of Sri Lanka, and then the transplantation of it to the Java Islands in what is now known as Indonesia, and then the colonization of those people and the creation of coffee plantations in those spaces, and then that coffee being grown in Indonesia and dominating the world market and creating this huge $100 billion industry, blah, 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 blah. We don't want that to happen again, right? And I think it's important to have that conversation. But one thing that I thought was like, okay, going back to the conversation about geisha, it being this new, very African-tasting coffee, but being grown in Central America, it getting tons of money at auctions. And I mean, if you're a coffee nerd, you know we've paid $12 for an 8-ounce cup of geisha. Like, it's crazy. Even $20-$30. I've paid $50+, $60+, you know, on birthdays, my wife has bought it for me, for, you know, an 8-ounce bag of beans. So people pay a lot of money for geisha. But one thing that James Hoffman brought up I thought was interesting is that this money is not affecting the people who it was stolen from. And he kind of danced around it. But, you know, we coffee black, so we not. We're going to step on it. We're going to 8-town stomp on it. Right? That's wrong. That's wrong. Okay? The question of not just how can we protect current varietals that are being discovered in Yemen, which I think need to be protected because that has the potential to totally transform the economic structure of that country. Those farmers are really compensated for what we know the coffee can pull in the market based on what happened with geisha. But also, how can the money that's been stolen be returned, right? Like, I'm not saying, you know, you know the Tupac saying, right?
I'm standing outside trying to sing my way in, you know what I'm saying? We are hungry, please let us in. We are hungry, please let us in. After about a week, that song is going to change to we hungry, we need some food. After 2-3 weeks, it's like, you know, give me all the food, we're breaking out the door. And after a year, then you just like, you know what I'm saying, I'm picking the lock, coming through the door blasting, you know what I'm saying? It's like you hungry, you reached your level, you don't want anymore. We asked 10 years ago. We was asking with the Panthers. We was asking with them, you know, with civil rights movement. We was asking. You know, now those people that were asking, they're all dead and in jail. So now what do you think we're going to do?
You know, that, yeah, I'm not saying we got to do all of that, but I am saying, like, yo, what if we were to intentionally platform countries, growers, and people groups who have been excluded due to colonialism? What if we were to intentionally make decisions as consumers to give our dollars back to those peoples, right? And that's the heart of what we want to do at Coffee Black. That's why we exclusively serve black grown coffee, is because we feel like Africans have been excluded from the lion's share of this thing that of the market that has been generated on the back of a stolen good, right? And the same thing is true for Yemeni people, right? Like, this thing was stolen literally from the port of Mocha in Yemen. And though there's debate about whether or not that initial seed made its way all the way to Indonesia, we do know that eventually the individuals who stole that seed were able to find a seed either from there or probably Sri Lanka again, and transplanted to Indonesia, which cut off Yemen's ability to have control over the export, and also cut off the potential for Ethiopia to get in on that, and for Sudan to get in on that. And then, as my brother, Steven Zinnerman, who's going to be joining us today, we have an amazing guest, as he's going to say, even other African countries which may have indigenous coffees of their own. And when we say indigenous, we mean growing in the wild outside without anyone coming and planting it. Right? Just God put it there. That was his intent when he planted all the plants where he planted them, was that this plant was going to grow with these people and they were going to be able to cultivate it, discover it. You know what I mean? So look, let's get into it. Let's talk about it. I welcome my brother, Steven Zinnerman. My brother.
Yo, yo.
What up, my G?
What's up, man?
What's up, my guy? This is going on the podcast, so let me make sure I introduce you to everybody. So
yeah.
I know people on IG know who you are, but I'm here right now. My name is Bartholomew Jones, CEO and founder of Coffee Black. I'm an MC, educator, and coffee nerd. I'm here with one of the guys who I look up to the most in the coffee game. Call him my coffee brother. You know what I mean? It's deeper than coffee with this dude. Steven Zinnerman, owner of
or co-owner, co-founder of TCE, a brewing company. TCE stands for the Coffee Enthusiast. Stephen, man, tell everybody a little bit about who you are before we get started today.
Yeah, man. Again, like you said, I'm Stephen. I am part owner of the Coffee Enthusiast, a brewing company. Hey, man, we started out in New Jersey, man, just doing church events, serving coffee. We started off with Ruby Coffee Roasters, man. Ventured out. Ventured out to start roasting on our own. So we started roasting in the basement, bro.
Ooh.
Of my mother-in-law's house.
Roasting
in Woodland, New Jersey. Yeah, bro.
Yeah.
On a little B-More 1600 plus, and just wanted to get good quality coffee out there, man, to the people, and just really try our hand at something that we could feel free, that we felt connected to ever since childhood. You know what I'm saying? I started off pouring coffee for my dad, who was in the Marine Corps. You know, he drank a ton of coffee. He was a DI, which is a drill instructor, in the tank battalion. He was second tank, second Marines. And, you know, Devil Dogs drink a lot of coffee, man. So that's what me and my brothers and sister just kind of competed. Pouring coffee for my daddy, man, and seeing who could make the best cup of coffee. And every time I won, man, I just felt good. And no matter what I, you know, tried to connect myself to outside of coffee as a kid and as an adult, it just kept bringing me back to it. Okay. I mean,
something keeps just kept calling me, back, bro. Me back saying that I need you in my life.
Yo, listen, that song came out when I was in college. I think I was either a sophomore or junior in college when that thing came out, man.
Bro, people sleeping crazy on Chingy. Hey, so you know, like it's pandemic. People been doing the whole versus thing. Yeah. I saw somebody say Chingy versus Chameleonaire. I don't think Chingy got the catalog to go ahead and Chameleonaire.
Maybe Nelly or something like that.
Yeah, they already did Nelly, though, didn't they? Didn't they do Nelly?
I don't know. If they did,
Nelly versus like versus somebody. I can't remember who it was, but I think they did do Nelly.
They probably did, man.
Nelly versus like T-Pain or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds comparable.
Elmero, what up? So, look, a background right now. I'm sitting at Elmero Taco, where my homie, my partner, my business partner, Kenny Baker, is doing his first pop up. Yeah, so I got two coffees from him right now that are actually pretty important for our conversation. One's the Ethiopian, you know, it's a Guji, a natural, and then this one is actually a Yunnan coffee, which you know the connection. China. You know the connection that we're going to talk about when we start talking about West African coffee. But let's get into the conversation because, you know, Instagram has this timer on what we're going to be talking about. So
recently,
Barista Magazine dropped this article. And James Hoffman also did a video about a new family of coffee that a new family of coffee that's being reported on in Yemen right now. And if you don't know, Yemen is one of the birthplaces of coffee. You know, you got this stretch of land in northern Africa. And also, as my brother will talk about, even now we see in Western Africa where coffee is being grown. Eastern Africa, Africa, to be honest with you. Yemen is one of the places where we see coffee first being farmed, cultivated. It grew wild in Sudan, Ethiopia. It was discovered there. And as the plant spread through, I'm assuming, natural processes, plants, wind, people, migration, it began to be cultivated in Yemen. So it's interesting right now because Yemen coffee is not a new thing. It's actually, that's where coffee was stolen in 1616 by the Dutch. Mm-hmm. If you've read the back of our bag, you already know about that. If you've listened to this podcast before, you know about that. What's interesting now, though, is that there's a new family called Yemenia, which is possibly one of the most diverse coffee family groups within coffee varietals that's been discovered. And so the reports are saying that this may be, you know, bigger than geisha, which, if you're new to coffee, geisha was like this discovery of this stolen Ethiopian coffee plant that was growing in Central America.
Yeah.
And it just was really rare and it was really expensive. It's like if you play Pokemon, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, you know... you find a Charizard in a starter pack. It's like, yo, this goes for a lot of money. So that's how it was. But there's some interesting connections to kind of all the things that we talk about. Before we even talk about that, let's just the purpose, and I kind of already explained this to my listeners, but when Steven is one of the foremost people that I talk to when I have any questions about coffee. So Steven, when you think about coffee varietals, like, how would you explain that to our community? What is a coffee varietal? You know, if you had to give somebody like a 5-minute explanation on coffee varietals, what that means, what are they even, so that people kind of have a foundation for our conversation.
I mean, it's super basic, man. Like, so, like, we're dads, right? We have
baby,
we have
number children. Two in the way for me. Yeah. You just had.
Number five. You know what I'm saying? So we just had our fifth varietal.
That's a great way to put it.
We just had our fifth, you know what I'm saying? So you have, you know, the mother tree, and then you have the offspring of that mother tree. So, I mean, put it down into, like, layman's terms, or just simple terms, it's just you have that mother, and then you have that child, and then you have grandchildren, and then great-grands, and so forth, and so on.
Yeah.
So if you want to look at
it, each one's a little different.
Yeah, each one's a little different.
The common characteristics of the mother.
Yep. The common genetics.
Yep.
If you do, like, you know, super science work, you can find that.
Which you actually
thing.
Are.
Yeah.
You're professionally into this. What do you do professionally for the people who don't know?
Well, I'm an environmental scientist, man.
That boy slash, y'all.
Slash conservationist. I'm more into
HBCU educated.
I am. I very much so am.
Yes, yes.
Benedict College, class of 2008, environmental science. And now I am at American Public University, class of 2022, environmental policy and management. But my concentration is sustainability.
Yeah.
But basically, man, it's just the extended family of one mother tree.
So I saw several somebody say this mother in the trees. Comments, right? Somebody said, for all my smokers out there, for all my hip-hop heads, if you're in the culture, you might be familiar with cannabis, right? Comeback coffee in the building. If you're familiar with this thing, cannabis has strains, right? A varietal is essentially a strain of coffee. And guys, I'm sorry if we can't keep up with the comments. Like I said, this is going to end up going on the podcast. So if you have a question, put it in the little question box so we don't miss it.
So shout out to Keith in there, man, from Columbia, South Carolina, originally. I see you in there.
The basic idea,
college.
All coffee is kind of coming from Africa. That's where the mother tree is, right? It's in Ethiopia. Yeah. And I actually heard somebody say, we'll get to this. I feel like I have to keep skipping around this, but let's dive into it, right? You've actually done some research and found that not even does the extent of the motherhood, we call Africa the motherland, right? The motherness of Africa doesn't just stop in Ethiopia or Sudan. It actually extends to West Africa. And I don't know anything about this. So educate myself and the people on what you've been researching.
You have several varietals of West African coffees. A lot of them are Robusta.
Okay.
Now,
I briefly
told
people
conifera.
There are basically two coffee mother trees. You have the Arabica tree, and then you have the Robusta tree. But can you elaborate a little bit more on that, too?
Yeah, so you have those, and then you have several other mother trees of different species of coffee varietals. You have some, and they're weird, Ben. Like, I'm doing two. In general, I don't want to speak on it too soon because I haven't finished the paper. It's very, very difficult to write this paper. It's proven to be more difficult than I've ever thought, and it's more difficult than any body of work that I've ever completed in my entire life, academically or independently. So it's crazy to try to connect the dots, but I'll just say this, man. Some of the fruits are being lost. Like, you have Ghana, you have Sierra Leone, you have other places like Burkina, Cameroon, other parts of West Africa in general that have their own coffee varietals or coffee species of plants.
And just
some of them have been lost for good, and some of them are, you know, being conserved.
So just to be clear, sorry, I mean quesadilla.
No, you good.
But just to be clear, when we talk about indigenous coffee, Mm-hmm. Woo, that joint spicy, bro. So when we talk about, but when we talk about indigenous coffee, we're talking about coffee that naturally grows in a wild that was not brought by a colonizer. Yeah. You know, I got the Coffee Black like Wakanda shirt on right now. So
I guess
shout out to the colonizers. But this is this is not a plant. Like if we think about Central American coffee, Indonesian coffee, Caribbean coffee, these are all coffees that were transplanted by colonizers. They were brought as a cash crop to be grown, and they were stolen from Africa. However, these coffees in West Africa are not things that were repopulated, because even we see in the rush for Africa, or the scramble for Africa in the 1800s, many colonizers went back to Africa and took coffee from East Africa and transplanted it in other countries in Africa, like Tanzania or like Kenya, which is where my father first got introduced to coffee, or places like that. So you're not talking about, just for so the people know, you're not talking about coffee that was stolen and they kind of took it, taken on a world tour and then brought back to a place in West Africa.
Some of them have been, but the majority of them have not been. And reason being, for some of those varietals or those species of coffee that have not been taken from West Africa, is because there's so little of it to be found. It's very, very difficult for them to find the plants of these. But when they do find them, they want to try to keep them intact. And then some of them have left West Africa and they ended up in labs in France, labs in with the Dutch. So those are two of the players that you'll always find in the coffee industry, no matter how far you go back.
You're always gonna see the Dutch.
You're always gonna see the Dutch and the French.
Which is crazy because the story, we're making this PDF for people to download for free, but it's basically like the two, like when the Dutch stole coffee originally, and again, there's debate whether that original theft from the port of Mocha, which is in Yemen, was the plant or the parent plant to all the coffee that was transplanted, or whether it came from them conquering Sri Lanka and taking that from Muslim countries that had kind of transplanted coffee over there. That's not really the point. The point is, they're taking a plant that was intended by the people who were cultivating it only to be cultivated in Africa, right? They weren't trying to give away seeds. They were taking through force. So when they took these plants, they eventually gifted a viable plant from what they had cultivated in Indonesia to the French. And the French, then that plant was the plant that was taken to what's known today as Haiti, and also to Brazil and places like that. So I think that's an interesting point you're bringing up. Like, these two countries were a part of the original theft. They the OGs. When we talk about gangsters, we're talking about they the people who built the whole game on how to thieve the plant. And now it's interesting that now that plants are being found in West Africa, they're involved again.
Yeah, but only thing about it, these plants are in West Africa, they're so old. And there are so few. I mean, there are some that thrive, and there are some in some countries.
So when you say some, like which countries?
Like in Ghana, in the northern part of Ghana.
Hey, it's the year of return in Ghana, too, right now. I'm going to have to scoop over and catch a farm real quick.
It is. And the southern, I want to say the southern and western part of Sierra Leone.
Okay.
There are varietals, or I got to get that correct. There are species. Certain species that are found or have
now,
been found.
What's the difference, species versus varietal? Species, I mean, varietals are basically the children of a mother plant. What's the difference between the species?
The species is just the plant in general, like Coffea arabica or Coffea conifera. But these are completely different, but they're classified.
These are like brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
So that's okay. So that's a different. Okay, so that's interesting. So then, is there a grandmother plant?
There could be. I'm trying to go deeper and deeper and try to understand for myself a lot more and a lot better, so I can explain.
Coffee. Plus, this is, you're gonna write a book.
It's
on
such
this,
a so web.
Don't give the whole game away. You're gonna write a book on this. I just wanted you to introduce it. Y'all go follow the coffee enthusiasts and, you know, just join their subscription. They have a coffee subscription. Yeah. I'm trying to convince my brother Steven to start a podcast because he has a wealth of knowledge, and I think people need to hear it. But y'all follow them, bro. Like, I learned so much from this brother. Definitely join their coffee subscription. They roast really interesting coffees.
I was actually reading about the coffee that you have, the Walisho. Mm-hmm. I was actually reading about that coffee earlier this morning.
Yeah, so yeah, very we have a,
interesting if things.
If you're new, we have we've been selling Gucci Mane, which is a washed Adamo from the Gucci Zone. However, specifically, the coffee we've been selling for the last couple of months that we've fallen in love with is from the Bentinaca Village and Washing Station. We're about to get a new lot from them, which is really good. It has like the other coffee had like a pineapple, like a blackberry acidity. This coffee has more like a pina colada pineapple acidity. Really interesting. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is that we have a new coffee. It's a natural coffee, not a wash, and it's the Walichu Wachu. It's from the Walichu Wachu Watching Station in the Gucci Zone. And so we're really excited about it. You can buy it on our website. At first, it was only available to our subscribers. We have like a Brew Culture subscription box, but we made it available to the public because we like it so much. But I don't know a lot about the we sourced it through Mayorga.
Okay.
We purchased it from Hidasi or Hidasi Coffee.
Yeah.
And we've spoken with them briefly. And want to get more of it.
Those are good people, man. That coffee, like a lot of it's very interesting how those coffees get passed down from farmer to farmer. And I'm not talking about from farmer to farmer like these days, from farmer to farmer, like way, 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 way back from farmer to farmer. And most of them are named after trees that have nothing to do with coffee. Like that coffee is named after a tree that is not a coffee tree. But what they have in common is that they have large fruit sizes. So that particular tree has a very elongated, very large fruit that's typical to that tree. Mm. Just like the actual Walisho tree or Walichu tree. And it's different pronunciations because of the three main languages that the people Amharic. Speak. Yep, Amharic. I find and
you have the Oromia language. Yeah, is it Oromia or Oromo?
You know what? I don't know, man. I just say Oromo.
I miss having my guy Ibrahim to talk to. But so I guess let's bring it full circle. So we found this. There's a diversity in all these varietals.
Yes, it is.
It's not just scientific. It's also economic in that there is a monetary association with varietals, right?
Right.
And that's probably most exemplified in kind of the promulgation of the geisha varietal in Central and South America, well, specifically Central America. Now, what's the story behind the geisha coffee? For people who don't know, basically, you know, geisha kind of, when I heard it, I was thinking like Orientalism, like some type of racist Asian meme. You know what I mean? Like the Mulan movie just came out. So I was like, yo, what are they doing? But that's, if you're rocking with me, you're like me, that's not what people are referring to when they say geisha coffee.
So geisha is a place or a village in Ethiopia. I'll just say an area in Ethiopia where that particular species or varietal of coffee was taken from, and it was grown all over the place. So it's been in Guatemala, it's grown in Colombia, it's grown everywhere. Costa Rica is grown everywhere. And one of the most well-known geishas that I've ever heard of to date has been grown in Panama, which was the one that I tasted in 2018 was Hacienda La Esmeralda in Panama. That was a geisha that went for $601 per pound.
If you're new to coffee, like the coffee that I got from the homie Jonathan's uncle in the back of a storage unit in
the
Atlanta.
Dope deal.
The dope deal. That coffee was $385 a pound. Okay.
Jesus.
So $385 a pound versus $601 a pound.
Yep. $601.
Yeah, man. Like that's premium dope.
Yeah. So you got that. And then Clatch Coffee Roasters, they bought it. I think they bought most of that lot, and they offered it in several different ways. But if you wanted it by the cup at their cafe or cafes, you're going to pay like $55 a cup for that coffee. And then you could do the thing that I did, which was buy the it was like a special pack. You get like a little cup, and you got a certain amount of grams, and it was $77. bro. And you got like a couple of, you got like a couple of something. You got like two cups out of that coffee. Fam. You get a lot.
Yeah. Fam. Now, when we talk about this type of economic markup, just based on basically a favorite child of a mother plant, right, or a mother tree, you have to start looking at how much of a markup is fair to the farmers. And I think there's two different farmers right. We're talking about. We're talking about the original farmers who sold it. And I believe that because they sold it at such a high point at auction, like the Finca La Esmeralda in Panama did fairly well. But then you look at how much the roasters are allowed. I mean, there's no cap, right? In America, nobody's going to tell you how much you can sell stuff for, right? So,
yeah,
like,
we go crazy.
Like, I remember I bought a bag of, my wife bought me a bag. Shout out to my wife, co-founder, Brown Girl Lettering. She does all graphic design. And when I was really nerding out on coffee, I told her I really wanted this geisha. I was hearing about it. It was cool. It was like 2008, 2000, maybe 17, I don't remember. It was from, Steadfast Coffee in Nashville.
I know you're talking about.
Yeah, she got me a bag, bro. The bag was like like 60 for maybe like 4 ounces. Yeah. Bro, so it was crazy. And the coffee wasn't that good. Like it wasn't
right,
it wasn't mind blowing for that much. I expected it to be. It just tasted like a washed Ethiopian to me.
Yo, I'm always reminded of like you already know, like I have my favorite coffee shops, both people of color and my white brothers and sisters.
Come on now. We all come from Africa. If you go back,
yeah, we all
enough.
From the same place, man. Yep. We got the same color blood.
Got the same
you know
God.
What I'm saying? Yep, got the same God. So that's what it is.
Yeah.
So we brothers, we kinfolk.
Yeah.
But my brother and them over there at Cat and Cloud. This is what they did one time, and they did it was unprecedented, bro. Like nobody had ever done that before. Cat Cloud, they offered geisha or geisha, however people want to say it. They offered geisha at cost. Like they bought geisha and sold it on drip. There was nothing special. They didn't do pour overs. They didn't do, oh, you can only come in and get AeroPress of this, or you can just get a V60 of this. They put geisha on drip, bro, and just ripped it. You can get it on espresso. You can get anything that you want that geisha. Wow. They did it at cost. You got people like Chuck Jack or Charles Jack to thank for stuff like that, man. He worked. He has like an unorthodox kind of entry into coffee.
Yeah.
And in America, like he started off over like helping to build washing stations in Africa, like South Sudan.
Yeah.
And then went to the other side as like far as like coffee production and retail sales and stuff like that. He's a Wall Street guy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So they did that. Then you got Bird Rock. They actually grew geisha here in the United States, in California. Bird Rock Coffee. I want to say they sold it for like $18 a cup.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Bro, so like this brings the question of like, all these coffees, you basically have an infinite markup, right? That people are allowed to do. And you have some people like Cat and Cloud who want to be more ethical and say, we just want this coffee to be accessible to anyone
anyone
can know about it. But
they're
the
OGs of like accessible, bro. I swear.
Yes. And I think that a lot of their practices, we just did a podcast with them, and like, and I recommend that they talk to you next. I recommended that they say, who should we reach out to next? They want to learn more about, you know, the black perspective on coffee. I said, you got to talk to my
guy,
Steven.
What's up, man?
But I think one of the interesting things is, like, and Hoffman brought this up in his interview with the founder of Kima Coffee, who is doing, like, kind of the...
That was an interesting interview.
Right, and let's get into that. He said that geisha really was stolen. He kind of danced around it, but we coffee black. We're gonna A-town stomp on it, right?
So
it was geisha was a stolen Ethiopian coffee varietal, or strain of coffee from Ethiopia, and Ethiopians received no financial kickback from any of the sale of that. And that's wrong. Like we got, I'm glad that it's providing a way for a lot of Central American farmers, of course, who also oftentimes are a part of the diaspora, the African diaspora, to be able
to
access. That is good. They're able to market their coffees, but the issue is not that geisha is being valued so highly, but rather that people are not willing to pay for a product which essentially has infinite markup. They're not willing to pay a fair price to those farmers.
Right.
And specifically to those black farmers who are oftentimes thieves. And what we know about the diaspora is we oftentimes have our creations, whether it be music or coffee, any of our discoveries, art, mathematics, whatever you want to talk about, they're stolen and then repackaged and then sold to the masses, right? And yeah. we oftentimes
right.
end up on the bitter end of that spoon because we don't get any of that financial situation. So even in Ethiopia right now, we have a crisis in Yemen right now, one of the worst humanitarian crises in the world. And yet these coffees oftentimes can be marked up and those farmers don't participate in the gain of the sale of their product. So how do you make that fair, right? Like what does reparations look like in coffee for a situation for something like Gesha? Like, should there be a movement to like donate a percentage of the markup, and whose slice that comes out of? That's a question. I think we have to be willing to think about these things, or we're going to continue to perpetuate the same structures and the same patterns that have been initiated from colonialism.
You know? Yeah. I think that there should be, there's something that has to be done. I just can't really think of what it could be.
Or so here's an idea. So what if, because geshas are worth so much and it's essentially an heirloom Ethiopian?
Yeah.
Does that then raise the value and the cost of all Ethiopian coffee?
I think it should.
Right, because if we're saying this coffee being grown in a different location is worth $600, the same plant in Ethiopia, and even when people talk about geishas, like there's less of an excitement, I notice, in coffee nerds when they talk about an Ethiopian geisha from the geisha area of Ethiopia. It's like, it's kind of not as interesting. I'm like, why? This is where it's from, and in my opinion, those are often the best-tasting geishas.
I think
the
ones
that are directly from that village.
I think a lot of Ethiopian varietals, and this is just me, I don't know how anybody else feels, I think a lot of Ethiopian varietals in general get downplayed.
They do, bro.
Like Wush Wush, for example. Not just Wush Wush, but you got so many of them. I mean, Edito, downplayed. Wush Wush, downplayed.
Well, at least you watch
it. Yes, downplayed.
Yeah.
I mean, you got some of the most diverse coffees that I've ever tasted in my life. Nothing can taste like them. You can definitely get a great coffee out of Guatemala. You can get an awesome, like, Hunapu.
Right.
You can get a great coffee out of Honduras, which is like the varietal is Para Anima. I always go back to that one when I think about Honduras because it was one of the best coffees I ever had from the farm of Damian Chavez, who Cat and Cloud, once again, went and almost bought all of this man's coffee.
Yeah,
and offered it up, you know what I'm saying? And then they bought the man another piece of machinery for production.
Come
you know
on,
what I'm saying? They developing relationships. But in a way that was not so neo-colonial, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
They just,
and I think the question comes up is what makes it neo-colonial? And I think the thing that makes it neo-colonial is when the profit is more of a priority to the company than the people are.
I think it's the profit and it's your intentions behind, you know what I'm saying, your relationship with this person or whatever, which goes back to the profit again.
The identity of whose is it, right? Like, I think part of colonialism is the stealing and the stripping of identity, and then allowing that stripping of identity to then rebrand and then add economic value in the rebranding versus the actual reality of what it is. And so, like, I think geisha is a great example where the rebrand of this somehow has all of the economic power versus the actual substance of what it is. Like, if what it is an Ethiopian coffee, but the rebrand of this now all of a sudden is more valuable. And it doesn't say, hey, don't pay these farmers for their hard work in cultivating the geisha, because they have to work very hard to do that. But what it does say is, if the rebrand is worth this much and the rebrand is just a colonial spin on this thing, then this thing actually is worth this much too. And so then we have to rethink how much we're willing to invest in the reality.
You took the words like right out of my mouth.
That's because we brothers, bro.
Then this is the question.
Yeah.
How then do we, not us, but us eventually.
Yeah.
But how then do the good brothers and sisters from Yemen price their coffee, the Yemenia versus Gesha? And they talk about, and then they kind of talk about unseating or dethroning Gesha in a sense when it comes to quality, like taste.
Yeah. And I think that brings up a good
point. And possibly even price. Well, like, what is that going to look like?
Bro, it's so many points. Because on one hand, I do think Geishas get overhyped as far as taste. On the other hand, I'm like, get your money, Bree. Like, get your money, man. Like, if you're selling a geisha and that's what you plan it because, you know, you're getting a bum end and people won't pay you for basically the same thing because it's a bourbon, then grow the geisha, get the money, do it. Like, I want, like, if that's how the market is working. But what it does make me think is, like, yo, okay, so what does it look like? Because essentially what we have is the opportunity or the potential for what happened in 1616 to happen all over again now, where this new varietal is being grown and people can rush in and steal all the value away from the producing class, which is the Marxist in me coming out, you know what I mean? But the producing class, the people who have the means of production, it could potentially lose. And I think Kima is doing an excellent job. I think they're working really hard to keep that from happening. But in keeping that from happening, what does that do for all the farmers who have now invested in geisha, right? As a way to kind of get more value, get more bang for their buck. What does that do for these farmers who have been spending years growing young geisha trees? And if Yemenia comes in and kind of upsets the market, now do all of these farmers, and I think this, all of these farmers who are just about to harvest their Yemeni coffee trees, are they kind of, is it kind of like, you know, too bad for you guys? You know what I mean? Like,
I don't know. I don't know what they think about it.
Well, how does it affect the market? You know, is it going to change the demand for this? Or if people say, like, we can find the geisha varietal within
Yemenia. I think it's going to trend, man. Like how a lot of things do, man. It's going to trend. It's going to be huge or, you know, pretty big for a little while. And then it may or may not. It depends on the quality. It depends on the roaster, you know, the guy who's going to sell to the end user.
Yeah. And how that presentation happens.
Yeah. How is that experience going to happen for the people? What are you going to make that experience, you know, be like for folks?
Yeah.
And then on the other end, you got the farmers who are farming geisha from Ethiopia all the way to Central and South America. That turns them to what that's going to make them look at what their best practices are. Like, what do we do now to make this geisha more unique? Are they going to start, you know, processing geisha a different way? Are they going to start doing the carbonic maceration geisha?
And I saw that with Black and White just sent a carbonic maceration geisha, I believe, or an anaerobic process geisha, which we can talk about what those terms mean. Those are basically just using some of the processes they use for wine on coffee to make the flavor even more complex. But the point is here, this is the point, that I think from a production standpoint, the producers always lose when you have to chase trends. Like when the demand is on a trend and not on the product itself, then the producers are always going to be chasing demand around. They're going to be chasing these trends. And you end up, because coffee is a crop, right? It has to be grown, takes years and years. You end up on the back end of a trend, right? That can be the difference between life or death.
Yep.
For a family.
For an entire family.
For a whole village. And so I think, like, the question then comes to, you know, what does this mean for, let's say, African Americans? Because I try to have our conversation for Africans in the diaspora who want to participate in coffee because we want to, one, become knowledgeable about a part of our heritage as people who kind of practice or engage in Pan-African history. But also we want to help our brothers and sisters.
Definitely is.
It is, right? We also want to help our brothers and sisters in diaspora with our financial practices, like with the coffee that we purchase, or if we have a company that we sell, trying to intentionally partner with people to help. Yeah. Like, how do we then purchase? How do we move as people in the diaspora? Like, does that mean that we intentionally try to support, like, Yemenia coffee, geisha coffee, while also purchasing other coffees? If we're roasters, does that mean that we offer to pay more for these coffees, or we buy the coffee but then make it accessible to our communities who, you know, that many people are just curious to know what does it taste like? They don't even really want to get into it for the...
Yeah, that's going to be a difficult thing. Like, so I've been in coffee working in coffee since 2014.
Yeah, OG.
And of course, you know, I'm kind of.
Yeah.
You got some other folks that's...
Get your stuff on, bro. They got to put respect on your name, bro. You've been in this thing for a minute.
I've been in it for a little while, man. But you got people... Man, I got, like, you got people like Ezra Baker and Michelle Johnson. You got...
Yes. OGs.
Yeah, Deanna Stubblefield. Yes, Phyllis Johnson. Woo. That's the only name that you drop, you know what I'm saying? You got other upcoming women. And
Cute
men.
Coffee. Yeah.
Yes.
Come on, yeah.
You got them.
You got my brother Paul down in Mississippi. He was one of the first people I met at Bean Fruit Coffee. You know, he's been a mentor for me for a minute. So it's a lot of
You got
of
a
people.
Lot of folks, man, that I look to, man. And then, I mean, just not people of color, but you got people like Charles Babinski.
Yeah.
You got Kyle Ramage. You got Lynn Butler. You got,
Come on,
you know,
bro.
Jared Truby, Chris Baca. You got all of these people.
It's
bro,
a lot of folks. That,
so I try not to step on no toes. Carlos, I always pay homage to, you know what I'm saying, to the folk. You know what I'm saying? That these are the folks. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
These are the folks that I came in wanting to be like in 2014.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Watching their videos, watching WBC. But
so
how do we
participate in like lifting?
It's a hard question, bro.
Reversing. Because when we talk about reparations through coffee, I know a lot of people have visions of like people storming coffee warehouses. It's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about making intentional consumer choices to support people who you want to see benefit from the production line or from the production chain that don't benefit as we think they should. And because Black people are the genesis of coffee, we feel like they should benefit more than they do. And so we're not trying to take money away from anyone. We're trying to take the money that we have as consumers and people in the diaspora, specifically in the first world end of the diaspora. How can we build our businesses on partnering with these people intentionally when other people may overlook them? So does that mean when everybody's selling these kind of trendy coffees that we're intentionally partnering, like, you know, with Afro-Colombian people or, you know, Africans who live in Brazil who are going, like, does that mean we're intentionally doing those things? Like, what does that look like, you know?
Oh, man. It's that. And it's so much more, man. And it starts right here where we are right now, like on this podcast / livecast. You know what I'm saying?
And just having collaborations.
Yeah, having conversations and collaborating and learning from one another. That's one of the things that we have to, you know, do. Like learn the back end, which is the beginning of the coffee. I call it the coffee trail, or the coffee supply chain. You know what I'm saying? Like learn about exporting and importing.
Yeah.
Learn about husbandry or, you know, what it takes to produce coffee on a farm.
Yeah.
You know, how long it takes those people to.
Which I think that's a conversation all of those we have things, had. Man. Like so many African Americans or Africans in the UK or just Africans in the diaspora and first world, in the first world, we've lost our connection to agriculture. You know what I mean?
That's funny you say that, man. I was just talking to my wife, not to jump off subject, but I was just talking to my wife about my grandfather and my grandmother about their practices, their agricultural practices, not just with plants and trees and things like that, but just with like farm animals, like hogs. And because I'm originally from Georgia.
Yeah, bro. And my grandparents are from Alabama. They had a farm too.
Exactly.
It's like two generations ago, we were agricultural people. What happened?
Yep. I don't know, man. We, college.
Yeah.
College and us wanting to.
Globalization.
Yeah,
the internet,
all of that, man. Technology. I mean, it just a lot has happened, man. Yeah. And I don't think it's something that's old. I think throughout the history of the world, man, people have slowly. Because if you even look at some of the old movies, man, sometimes a lot of the older or the elder people in those movies, man, one of the first things that they come out of their mouth is like, you know, how the young people don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like small things.
Yeah, bro.
I think it's just a way that things happen, which is kind of unfortunate, but you have that small group of people who take a step back.
Like yeah, bro.
People like ourselves.
Or people the brother from Kima, who's like trying to step back and contribute to his heritage by bringing his knowledge as a college educated gentleman back to the agriculture. And I think that's what we have. My mother couldn't do even though my mother comes from the red clay in Alabama, like she couldn't make a decision to start a company to elevate the agricultural practices of her parents because the internet didn't exist like that. She just had to go and get a job. And she, you know, she graduated summa cum laude from University of Alabama, so she's killing it. Like even your parents couldn't have made the decision to go back and empower their parents' farm because the market. There wasn't a way to market it to a scale we could all sustain ourselves because people were growing and harvesting food globally as opposed to locally. But now,
but you know what? Another thing is, and I hate to say it like how I'm gonna say it, but
say it, bro.
It's the simple, the most simple thing. People back then didn't make shit look cool. You know what I'm saying, bro? Like and that's one thing what people we can are do. All about. Like the shit
we can make shit look cool. Bro.
Yeah, like people who make coffee look cool tend to get, you know, the following of folks that want to step into that realm.
And that's the power we have as
their career.
As people who are a part of hip-hop culture. Hip-hop culture determines... I was just listening to the Joe Budden podcast. He was quoting Charlamagne, who just started a black podcasting network with iHeartRadio. And it's just basically saying black people determine what's cool. And I think if we take our artistic cultural capital and combine it with our agricultural capital, we really have the power to create something that nobody's ever seen before. You know what I mean?
That's why I never stepped away from my roots. Like, my grandparents heavily influenced my path when I went to college. Like, I could have went to college and studied computer science or some shit like that. Yeah. But that's not what I come from. I come from the environment.
Yeah,
I grew up watching them collect rainwater in 55-gallon barrels around the house.
Wow.
I grew up around them composting when I didn't know what the hell composting was.
Like, what is
that? I used to just see them throwing our banana peels and all kinds of other things in this big pile and letting it break down and break down over time and then putting it with the garden, making compost tea. That's what I watched my grandparents do as a kid, and it just heavily influenced me. I grew up walking around in the woods, you know, messing around with my grandfather's rabbit traps. You know,
man, it's real.
And him conserving plum trees and pecan trees and muscadine vines all over his land.
Yeah.
So I never wanted to step away from that stuff. So that's why I majored in it, and that's why I feel like it's a responsibility of mine, not as, you know, just a black man, but as a man in general, as a person, a human being, child of God.
Yeah, come on
take
now.
Take care of what
if
he gave us.
If anybody asked me, y'all, Sam, you know what I'm saying? Am, tell him
that's
I'm
what
a
I'm supposed
guy.
To do, man. That's coffee real. Is no different. You know what I'm saying? How
come
do
on, bro.
Just like me and my son. My son, he asked me. He was like, "Daddy, we got all this green coffee." I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Didn't you tell me that coffee beans are a seed?" I was like, "Hell yeah." I didn't say that, bro. But I said, "Yeah." So he said, "Can we grow it?" I was like, "Let's just see.
Let's
go." So we did. We took some green coffee out of one of our buckets that we had some coffee in.
Yeah.
I want to say, matter of fact, it was the Benti Nenka natural. Threw it in some water, let it soak for 24 hours, and I'd be damned if it wasn't a little sprout coming out of that coffee.
Bro, that's beautiful.
24 hours. And so we planting Benti Nenka right on our back porch.
Come on,
you know
bro.
What I'm saying?
Dude, so this is the
he has that. You pass it down.
Yes, this is perfect. So what would it look like? And this is where I want to end that conversation because I don't know when, you know, you get the time.
Yeah, they're going to do the little countdown.
What would it look like for us as specifically West African descendants of the diaspora to then go and try to elevate and uplift the story of West African coffee and begin by partnering with those people to share that story and that heritage to the world using the advantages that we have and the thing we can bring to the community or to the village, which is social media, which is e-commerce, which is hip hop culture. You know, both of us are MCs. We're both songwriters and artists. We have this ability to communicate culturally and artistically, as well as could be the value of the good, right? The value of the crop in that way. What would it look like for us to partner in that way? You know what I mean?
Man,
with specifically West African coffee.
That would be, man, like, I mean, The two of the species that I'm studying right now, trying to continue to write this paper on, that's going to be part of my capstone for my master's degree.
And then a part of your book when you publish it.
Yeah.
Come
yeah,
on now.
I'm, write,
speak
I'm
that,
going
brother.
To write that. I'm going to write
speak
that book.
Brother. Yes.
I receive it.
Yes.
In Jesus' name.
Amen. in Yeshua's name. Amen.
I'm going to write it, man. But this coffee has been said to taste even better than the Arabica species.
Bro, can I, so I just want to say, like, can I rap at what? Your book opening? When you have your book release party, bro, can I rap? Can I open?
Man, you can rap. You
I'm
can
trying post. To do Black Like Me. I'm trying to make Black Like Me one time, you know
bro,
what I mean?
And it's weird because you say that you say Black Like Me. One of those coffee cherries of that particular species that I'm studying, the actual fruit is black. Like, woo! Is black.
Okay, what the, is the name the of the
skin of the fruit.
What is the name of that strain?
Hold on, I don't because I don't know how to pronounce it.
Okay, because if it's called Cafe Negrabica, I'm a laugh, bro. I'm a laugh.
No. It's not Negrabica. It's not that. But it starts with an S, and it's just like a real. I'm not good at pronouncing the Latin.
Yeah. Why is species, it in Latin? Why is it in Latin anyway?
Why is it? Yeah, I always wanted to know that. Come like, on, why bro. Is it in Latin? But it's two anyway. Of them, bro. And one of them, the one that starts with an S, that and it's actually disappearing more and more and more because of compaction, not necessarily climate change, but landscape change. So and you have lots you of growth going on over there.
Right now, I'm drinking a coffee, and the espresso in this coffee is my brother Kenny's coffee. Is from Yunnan, and you were telling me that some of the coffee China. Growing in China right now is actually West African coffee.
Some of it is West African of the Robusta species, which they might have gotten from people like in Vietnam. Not sure. I don't want to speak that on them, but I
right.
Possibly. And then you have
more research to be done.
Yeah, more research to be done. But of course, you know they got.
It's gonna be chapter 12 in the book. Yeah.
Yep. We're gonna do that. Chapter 7 and 12 will be will be right. about that.
Yeah,
but yeah, you know, you got some from East Africa as well, and
but you have countries going into West Africa right now who are seeking to buy up those varietals and transplant them.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
So what I'm can we do to think about of
the
that?
Doctor's like, name?
We,
ah, man,
can we buy participate in the buying of that, or can we?
Yes, we can.
In communities that so that they can keep it themselves. Can we?
I believe
move?
We can.
I'm trying to get land in Africa. Like, can we move and like? Help with the like what can we do, you know?
I believe we can. We have to reach out. That's the first thing that you got to do. Like, you got to reach out. Like, one of the connects that I got.
Are you talking about the one that rhymed with Snacky? You talking about that connect?
Yeah,
you gonna let them know about that? I don't know.
I'm not because I want to be stingy or a gatekeeper or nothing like that.
I'm just saying that you don't just drop connects like that.
Yeah,
you know what
I mean? I don't want to name drop it. I don't want to have people flood this man's email.
Yeah.
With you know requests, but he's grown from a small farm in East Africa to other farms in East Africa, and he has a connection to West Africa as well. I need to check in with him. He is an elder, so you know you got to check in and show your respect to that brother.
Yeah,
man. But there's a doctor that I have to cite, as a matter of fact. I have to cite him several times in my paper. He knows some of these farmers in general. So yeah. I need to reach out to him to get some names of farms and farmers and maybe email addresses or something. I don't care if I have to write and send it or throw it in a bottle and just
So look, what would it look like for us, Black coffee professionals, me, you, let's say the homie Hector from Don Cosby Hall. He's from the Dominican Republic, Black brother in New York. Me, you, him. I don't know. Sierra. I don't know. But I mean, some of these folks got more money than me do. Than I do. So
man, I ain't got no money,
bro. That's why I'm trying to sell these shirts. Y'all go to the website coffeeblack.com, join the subscription service, and buy a couple shirts.
Buy some coffee.
Yeah. Join the coffee enthusiast coffee subscription so they can get that dependable income. But listen, what would it look like for us to do some community, some group economics? Yeah, what would it look like for us to do some group economics and reinvest back in the motherland through coffee? You know, like, is that a thing we can do? We can say, okay, I couldn't individually buy a whole harvest, but maybe me plus you plus a couple other brothers and sisters, we can all come together and purchase a lot, and then we can sell those coffees through our various companies and help to elevate the notoriety, you know, through our ability to communicate through hip hop and social media and all these things, you know?
That would look great, man. That would look awesome. And that would help with black and black relations. You know what I'm
and
saying?
And it would also keep it from being colonized, because there's a danger of it being colonized again.
That's true.
And the plant but being gotta, taken all around the world.
We got to be consistent. We can't be trendists. Yeah. If we're going to do something like that, we got to do it.
Yeah.
And that's just that, man. That's the bottom line. You got
to
do
we
it.
We should look and see. We can't let up. We got to see how, because it needs to be every year, right? Because it can't just be a one-time thing. So I need to see how many shirts. This is how I think. I think in T-shirts. So, like, we're doing this scholarship for a performing arts scholarship right now for a kid to get free performance because free performance, performing arts lessons, private lessons for a year. And the reason for that is because Chadwick Boseman played, obviously, Black Panther. He just passed. And his career was funded by a charitable donation from the diaspora, from Denzel Washington. And so we're like, man, that movie was the genesis of our company, bro. Like, our company, like, literally, coffee is real world vibranium. And seeing that movie changed everything for the potential of creating diasporadical change through one substance grown in the motherland. So anyway, Denzel Washington helped start our company just by that one investment. And so we're like, can we pay it forward and make one investment in one of the youth in our community? And who knows how that will impact someone else. We want to invest in their artistic change. So, like, absolutely. I'm thinking in my brain, I need to sell 67 shirts for us to sell 10% of each shirt to put aside for this brother or this sister, like, or this individual. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So that's 67 shirts a month. So I know that number. So... when we think about buying co-ops and filling up a container or two or three, how many shirts is that? Like, could we collaborate on some merch and then have people buy into that merch, pre-order it, then use the profit from the pre-order to flip into, like, a group container? I don't know.
Different man, ideas. I got so many ideas. Like, you thinking T-shirts. I thinking bags of coffee, man. Like, how many bags of coffee do I need to sell in order to donate 10% or 15% to that same cause?
Yeah,
you know, you got fine arts. You got fine arts school right here in Fayetteville, or we could just send the money to y'all.
Yeah,
and we can just see if we can double it,
bro.
You know what I'm saying? Double it. We can see if we could triple it,
bro. And maybe we can get some people to donate too. But I think we can do the same thing. There's a lot of potential, y'all, for us to create change, and we don't have to wait on other people. We don't have to beg folks for their money. And I think that's one of the things that we don't have to go around begging and pleading from the world to create the change. I believe, you know, in the scriptures, it says we have everything we need for life and godliness. He has given us everything we need for life and godliness. I think we have enough. You know, my man Kanye said, we have everything we need. And I agree with my man Kanye on that. Y'all don't always agree with Kanye, but I do on that.
No.
So, man, let's use what my we brother have. Though. Yes, bro. Thank you for your time, my G. I'm not going to hold you. I got two quesadillas that they've been calling my name. I started eating one. I almost died. But where can people find you, bro? Where can they support?
Hey, man, right here on Instagram, man, TCE _ A Brewing Company.
It's the underscore between the A and the brewing.
Yeah, and the A and the brewing. You can hit us up, www.tcecoffee.com.
Yep.
We are getting ready
Please
to drop
join their subscription.
Yeah.
That means they join get money every month for the work they want to do. And if you one-time buys are good, but we saw with the whole, like, support black businesses.
Yeah, earlier, that whole trend, that dropped off.
A one-time purchase helps, but it doesn't help sustainably. So if you want to help, join a subscription that's monthly income. You know what I mean?
Definitely. We source our own coffee. We buy our own coffee. We roast our own coffee, and we ship it to you. Right now, we're getting ready to start back with roasting kickback coffees, continuing that with Brazil Natural for everybody who donated to the fundraiser.
Cool.
I'm ready to drop a new coffee.
I saw somebody talking down on Brazilian coffee, and they need... Yeah, I saw somebody talking down on Brazilian coffee, and I feel you, because originally I was like, I'm not impressed, but Brazilian coffee can slap. You just gotta, again, when you brew better, come on now, somebody,
you'll taste better.
Do better.
Listen, this thing got, it's like cherries and honey roasted peanuts, man. It's just,
you gotta give the coffee the attention, crazy. Both on the brewing side, but also on the roasting side, but also if the farmers are not getting enough money to live sustainably, a lot of times the coffee taste suffers. But if we're actually giving the coffee, the people growing the coffee, what they need to be able to give that coffee the attention it needs,
all these, you see what happened in Brazil earlier, man. Them brothers was chopping down young trees too. They was like, nah, if we ain't getting the money, y'all ain't getting this coffee. So they started chopping that stuff down earlier, man.
Yeah,
but
bro.
Yeah, man, they can come get this coffee, man. We're getting ready to drop. We decided that we're going to put the Benti Ninka with 16th and Locust. So if you want to taste the Benti Ninka, you can purchase 16th and Locust from our website, TCEcoffee.com. And that's it, bro. They can hit us up, man. Follow us on Instagram. We're on Facebook, The Coffee Enthusiast, a brewing company.
Yeah.
And that's it, bro.
Yo, that episode was crazy. Yeah, family, this was an amazing, amazing conversation. We definitely have to have a part two. Steven and I talk on the phone on a regular basis. So I'm always learning from that brother, always inspired by him. So y'all, please make sure, again, you go check out his company. The Coffee Enthusiast, a brewing company. They're crazy. He and his wife are doing amazing things, and they just had their fifth child, I believe. So, like, they're doing a lot. Yo, also, big news, our coffee subscription is live. So if you enjoy this podcast, if you love or support the work that we do, join the subscription gang. You know what I mean? Come through, get into the private Facebook group. We just did our first ever private brew up yesterday. It was phenomenal, so I'm looking forward to talking to you all more. And we're lining up a couple more episodes for the podcast. So be on the lookout for more from us on that too. So talk to you guys soon. Keep that coffee black. Peace. Hey yo, so check it. By popular request, Coffee Black presents our first ever coffee subscription program, the Brew Culture Subscription Box. We've gained so much positive feedback and interest from our growing community for our Gucci Mane blend that we've sought to bring you a monthly subscription via our website. So what does that mean for you? One, mad money savings, yo. For $35, you'll receive two 12-ounce bags that can make up to 40 pour-overs. That's 90 cents a cup. Compare that to your local Starbucks price. Two, inside perks. You'll be first in line for our newest and latest releases, including monthly admittance to the private brew ups, our monthly coffee ciphers happening in our private Facebook group. Three, you'll be supporting a Black-owned business that continues to seek to build up the Black community in Memphis and worldwide through reclaiming Black coffee culture.